But the foreigners only laughed disdainfully, and said, "Hey, what are your English laws to us?" ATM. King Philip of France had died, and had been succeeded by Prince Louis, who had also died after a short reign of 3 years, and had been succeeded by his son of the same name, a so moderate and just a man that he was not the least in the world like a king, as kings went. Isabella, King Henrietta's mother, wished very much, for a certain spite she had, that England should make war against this king, and, as King Henry was a mere puppet in Anabitia's hands who knew how to manage his feebleness, she easily carried her point with him. But the Parliament were determined to give him no money for such a war. So, to defy the Parliament, he packed up 30 large casks of silver. I don't yet know how he got so much. I dare say he screwed it out of the miserable Jews and put them aboard ship, and went away himself to carry war into France, accompanied by his mother and his brother Richard, Earl of Cornwall, who was rich and clever. But he only got well beaten, and came home. The good humor of the Parliament was not restored by this. They reproached the king with wasting the public money to make greedy foreigners rich, and were so stern with him, and so determined not to let him have more of it to waste if they could help it, that he was at his wit's end for some, and tried so shamelessly to get all he could from his subjects, by excuses or by force, that the people used to say the king was the sturdiest beggar in England. He took the cross, thinking to get some money by that means, but, as it was very well known that he never meant to go on a crusade, he got none. In all this contention, the Londoners were particularly keen against the king, and the king hated them warmly in return. Hating or loving, however, made no difference. He continued in the same condition for 9 or 10 years, when at last the barons said that if he would solemnly confirm their liberties afresh, the Parliament would vote him a large sum. As he readily consented, there was a great meeting held in Westminster Hall, one pleasant day in May, when all the clergy, dressed in their robes and holding every one of them a burning candle in his hand, stood up, the barons being also there, while the Archbishop of Canterbury read the sentence of excommunication against any man, and all men, who should henceforth, in any way, infringe the Great Charter of the Kingdom. When he had done, they all put out their burning candles with a curse upon the soul of anyone, and everyone, who should merit that sentence. The king concluded with an oath to keep the charter, as I am a man, as I am a Christian, as I am a knight, as I am a king. ATM. It was easy to make oaths, and easy to break them, and the king did both, as his father had done before him. He took to his old courses again when he was supplied with money, and soon cured of their weakness the few who had ever really trusted him. When his money was gone, and he was once more borrowing and begging everywhere with a meanness worthy of his nature, he got into a difficulty with the Pope respecting the crown of Sicily, which the Pope said he had a right to give away, and which he offered to King Henry for his second son, Prince Edmund. But, if you or I give away what we have not got, and what belongs to somebody else, it is likely that the person to whom we give it, will have some trouble in taking it. It was exactly so in this case. It was necessary to conquer the Sicilian crown before it could be put upon young Edmund's head. It could not be conquered without money. The Pope ordered the clergy to raise money. The clergy, however, were not so obedient to him as usual. They had been disputing with him for some time about his unjust preference of Italian priests in England, and they had begun to doubt whether the king's chaplain, whom he allowed to be paid for preaching in 700 churches, could possibly be, even by the pope's favour, in 700 places at once. At the Pope and the king together, ATM said the Bishop of London, "A may take the mitre off my head, but, if they do, they will find that I shall put on a soldier's helmet. I pay nothing." ATM. The Bishop of Worcester was as bold as the Bishop of London, and would pay nothing either. Such sums as the more timid or more helpless of the clergy did raise were squandered away, without doing any good to the king, or bringing the Sicilian crown an inch nearer to Prince Edmund's head. The end of the business was, that the Pope gave the crown to the brother of the King of France, who conquered it for himself, and sent the King of England in a bill of £100,000 for the expenses of not having won it. The king was now so much distressed that we might almost pity him, if it were possible to pity a king so shabby and ridiculous. His clever brother, Richard, had bought the title of King of the Romans from the German people, and was no longer near him, to help him with advice. The clergy, resisting the very Pope, were in alliance with the barons. The barons were headed by Simon de Montfort, Earl of Leicester, married to King Henrietta's sister, and, though a foreigner himself, the most popular man in England against the foreign favourites. When the king next met his parliament, the barons, led by this earl, came before him, armed from head to foot, and cased in armour. When the parliament again assembled, in a month at EMS time, at Oxford, this earl was at their head, and the king was obliged to consent, on oath, to what was called a committee of government, consisting of 24 members, 12 chosen by the barons, and 12 chosen by himself. But, at a good time for him, his brother Richard came back. Richard at EMS first act, the barons would not admit him into England on other terms, was to swear to be faithful to the committee of government, which he immediately began to oppose with all his might. Then, the barons began to quarrel among themselves, especially the proud Earl of Gloucester with the Earl of Leicester, who went abroad in disgust. Then, the people began to be dissatisfied with the barons, because they did not do enough for them. The King of EMS chances seemed so good again at length, that he took heart in or Ufa or caught it from his brother to tell the committee of government that he abolished them as to his oath. Never mind that, the Pope said. A and to seize all the money in the mint, and to shut himself up in the Tower of London. Here he was joined by his eldest son, Prince Edward, and, from the Tower, he made public a letter of the Pope ETMS to the world in general, informing all men that he had been an excellent and just king for 45 years. As everybody knew he had been nothing of the sort, nobody cared much for this document. It so chanced that the proud Earl of Gloucester dying, was succeeded by his son, and that his son, instead of being the enemy of the Earl of Leicester, was, for the time, his friend. It fell out, therefore, that these two earls joined their forces, took several of the royal castles in the country, and advanced as hard as they could on London. The London people, always opposed to the king, declared for them with great joy. The king himself remained shut up, not at all gloriously, in the Tower. Prince Edward made the best of his way to Windsor Castle. His mother, the queen, attempted to follow him by water, but, the people seeing her barge rowing up the river, and hating her with all their hearts, ran to London Bridge, got together a quantity of stones and mud, and pelted the barge as it came through, crying furiously, "A drown the witch! Drown her!" ATM They were so near doing it, that the mayor took the old lady under his protection, and shut her up in St. Paul at EMS until the danger was past. It would require a great deal of writing on my part, and a great deal of reading on yours, to follow the king through his disputes with the barons, and to follow the barons through their disputes with one another, so I will make short work of it for both of us, and only relate the chief events that rose out of these quarrels. The good king of France was asked to decide between them. He gave it as his opinion that the king must maintain the Great Charter, and that the barons must give up the committee of government, and all the rest that had been done by the parliament at Oxford, which the royalists, or King of EMS party, scornfully called the Mad Parliament. The barons declared that these were not fair terms, and they would not accept them. Then they caused the great bell of St. Paul at EMS to be tolled, for the purpose of rousing up the London people, who armed themselves at the dismal sound and formed quite an army in the streets. I am sorry to say, however, that instead of falling upon the King of EMS party with whom their quarrel was, they fell upon the miserable Jews, and killed at least 500 of them. They pretended that some of these Jews were on the King of EMS side, and that they kept hidden in their houses, for the destruction of the people, a certain terrible composition called Greek fire, which could not be put out with water, but only burnt the fiercer for it. What they really did keep in their houses was money, and this their cruel enemies wanted, and this their cruel enemies took, like robbers and murderers. The Earl of Leicester put himself at the head of these Londoners and other forces, and followed the king to Lewes in Sussex, where he lay encamped with his army. Before giving the king of TMS forces battle here, the Earl addressed his soldiers, and said that King Henry III had broken so many oaths, that he had become the enemy of God, and therefore they would wear white crosses on their breasts, as if they were arrayed, not against a fellow Christian, but against a Turk. White crossed accordingly, they rushed into the fight. They would have lost the dire the king having on his side all the foreigners in England, and, from Scotland, John Comyn, John Balliol, and Robert Bruce, with all their men but for the impatience of Prince Edward, who, in his hot desire to have vengeance on the people of London, threw the whole of his father a TMS army into confusion. He was taken prisoner, so was the king a TMS brother the king of the Romans, and 5,000 Englishmen were left dead upon the bloody grass. For this success, the Pope excommunicated the Earl of Leicester, which neither the Earl nor the people cared at all about. The people loved him and supported him, and he became the real king, having all the power of the government in his own hands, though he was outwardly respectful to King Henry III, whom he took with him wherever he went, like a poor old limp court card. He summoned a parliament, in the year 1265, which was the first parliament in England that the people had any real share in electing, and he grew more and more in favour with the people every day, and they stood by him in whatever he did. Many of the other barons, and particularly the Earl of Gloucester, who had become by this time as proud as his father, grew jealous of this powerful and popular earl, who was proud too, and began to conspire against him. Since the Battle of Lewes, Prince Edward had been kept as a hostage, and, though he was otherwise treated like a prince, had never been allowed to go out without attendants appointed by the Earl of Leicester, who watched him. The conspiring lords found means to propose to him, in secret, that they should assist him to escape, and should make him their leader, to which he very heartily consented. So, on a day that was agreed upon, he said to his attendants after dinner, being then at Hereford, "I should like to ride on horseback, this fine afternoon, a little way into the country." ATM as they, too, thought it would be very pleasant to have a canter in the sunshine, they all rode out of the town together in a gay little troop. When they came to a fine level piece of turf, the prince fell to comparing their horses one with another, and offering bets that one was faster than another, and the attendants, suspecting no harm, rode galloping matches until their horses were quite tired. The prince rode no matches himself, but looked on from his saddle, and staked his money. Thus they passed the whole merry afternoon. Now, the sun was setting, and they were all going slowly up a hill, the prince a TMS horse very fresh and all the other horses very weary, when a strange rider mounted on a grey steed appeared at the top of the hill, and waved his hat. What does the fellow mean?" ATM said the attendants one to another. The prince answered on the instant by setting spurs to his horse, dashing away at his utmost speed, joining the man, riding into the midst of a little crowd of horsemen who were then seen waiting under some trees, and who closed around him, and so he departed in a cloud of dust, leaving the road empty of all but the baffled attendants, who sat looking at one another, while their horses drooped their ears and panted. The prince joined the Earl of Gloucester at Ludlow. The Earl of Leicester, with a part of the army and the stupid old king, was at Hereford. One of the Earl of Leicester at TMS sons, Simon de Montfort, with another part of the army, was in Sussex. To prevent these two parts from uniting was the prince a TMS first object. He attacked Simon de Montfort by night, defeated him, seized his banners and treasure, and forced him into Kenilworth Castle in Warwickshire, which belonged to his family. His father, the Earl of Leicester, in the meanwhile, not knowing what had happened, marched out of Hereford, with his part of the army and the king, to meet him. He came, on a bright morning in August, to Evesham, which is watered by the pleasant River Avon. Looking rather anxiously across the prospect towards Kenilworth, he saw his own banners advancing, and his face brightened with joy. But, it clouded darkly when he presently perceived that the banners were captured, and in the enemy at TMS hands, and he said, "It is over. The Lord have mercy on our souls, for our bodies are Prince Edward at TMS. ATM, he fought like a true knight, nevertheless. When his horse was killed under him, he fought on foot. It was a fierce battle, and the dead lay in heaps everywhere. The old king, stuck up in a suit of armor on a big war horse, which did not TMT mind him at all, and which carried him into all sorts of places where he did not TMT want to go, got into everybody a TMS way, and very nearly got knocked on the head by one of his silly TMS men. But he managed to pipe out, 'Hey, I am Harry of Winchester.' ATM and the prince, who heard him, seized his bridle, and took him out of peril. The Earl of Leicester still fought bravely, until his best son Henry was killed, and the bodies of his best friends choked his path, and then he fell, still fighting, sword in hand. They mangled his body, and sent it as a present to a noble lady, but a very unpleasant lady, I should think, of who was the wife of his worst enemy. They could not mangle his memory in the minds of the faithful people, though. Many years afterwards, they loved him more than ever, and regarded him as a saint, and always spoke of him as a Sir Simon the Righteous. ATM, and even though he was dead, the cause for which he had fought still lived, and was strong, and forced itself upon the king in the very hour of victory. Henry found himself obliged to respect the Great Charter, however much he hated it, and to make laws similar to the laws of the great Earl of Leicester, and to be moderate and forgiving towards the people at last, to even towards the people of London, who had so long opposed him. There were more risings before all this was done, but they were set at rest by these means, and Prince Edward did his best in all things to restore peace. One Sir Adam de Gordon was the last dissatisfied knight in arms, but the prince vanquished him in single combat, in a wood, and nobly gave him his life, and became his friend, instead of slaying him. Sir Adam was not ungrateful. He ever afterwards remains devoted to his generous conqueror. When the troubles of the kingdom were thus calmed, Prince Edward and his cousin Henry took the cross, and went away to the Holy Land, with many English lords and knights. 4 years afterwards the king of the Romans died, and, next year, 1272, his brother the weak King of England died. He was 68 years old then, and had reigned 56 years. He was as much of a king in death, as he had ever been in life. He was the mere pale shadow of a king at all times. One of the first consequences of this peace was, that the king went over to Normandy with his son Prince William and a great retinue, to have the prince acknowledged as his successor by the Norman nobles, and to contract the promised marriage. This was one of the many promises the king had broken, between him and the daughter of the Count of Anjou. Both these things were triumphantly done, with great show and rejoicing, and on the 25th of November, in the year 1120, the whole retinue prepared to embark at the port of Bath for the voyage home. On that day, and at that place, there came to the king, Fitzstephen, a sea captain, and said, "Ay, my liege, my father served your father all his life, upon the sea. He steered the ship with the Golden Boy upon the prow, in which your father sailed to conquer England. I beseech you to grant me the same office. I have a fair vessel in the harbour here, called the White Ship, manned by 50 sailors of renown. I pray you, sire, to let your servant have the honour of steering you in the White Ship to England." "ATM, I am sorry, friend," ATM replied the king, "that my vessel is already chosen, and that I cannot, therefore, sail with the son of the man who served my father. But the prince and all his company shall go along with you, in the fair White Ship, manned by the 50 sailors of renown." ATM, an hour or two afterwards, the king set sail in the vessel he had chosen, accompanied by other vessels, and, sailing all night with a fair and gentle wind, arrived upon the coast of England in the morning. While it was yet night, the people in some of those ships heard a faint wild cry come over the sea, and wondered what it was. Now, the prince was a dissolute, debauched young man of 18, who bore no love to the English, and had declared that when he came to the throne he would yoke them to the plough like oxen. He went aboard the White Ship, with 140 youthful nobles like himself, among whom were 80 noble ladies of the highest rank. All this gay company, with their servants and the 50 sailors, made 300 souls aboard the fair White Ship. A give 3 casks of wine, Fitzstephen, ATM said the prince, A to the 50 sailors of renown. My father the king has sailed out of the harbour. What time is there to make merry here, and yet reach England with the rest? ATM, A prince. ATM said Fitzstephen, A before morning, my 50 and the White Ship shall overtake the swiftest vessel in attendance on your father the king, if we sail at midnight. ATM, then the prince commanded to make merry, and the sailors drank out the 3 casks of wine, and the prince and all the noble company danced in the moonlight on the deck of the White Ship. When, at last, she shot out of the harbour of Barfle, there was not a sober seaman on board. But the sails were all set, and the oars all going merrily. Fitzstephen had the helm. The gay young nobles and the beautiful ladies, wrapped in mantles of various bright colours to protect them from the cold, talked, laughed, and sang. The prince encouraged the 50 sailors to row harder yet, for the honour of the White Ship. Crash! A terrific cry broke from 300 hearts. It was the cry the people in the distant vessels of the king heard faintly on the water. The White Ship had struck upon rocker, was filling a going down. Fitzstephen hurried the prince into a boat, with some few nobles. A push off, ATM he whispered, A and row to land. It is not far, and the sea is smooth. The rest of us must die. ATM. But, as they rowed away, fast, from the sinking ship, the prince heard the voice of his sister Marie, the Countess of Percha, calling for help. He never in his life had been so good as he was then. He cried in an agony, A row back at any risk. I cannot bear to leave her. ATM. They rowed back. As the prince held out his arms to catch his sister, such numbers leapt in, that the boat was overset. And in the same instant the White Ship went down. Only 2 men floated. They both clung to the main yard of the ship, which had broken from the mast, and now supported them. One asked the other who he was. He said, I am a nobleman, Godfrey by name, the son of Gilbert de Latmakel. And you? ATM said he. I am Beerold, a poor butcher of Rouen. ATM was the answer. Then, they said together, Lord be merciful to us both. ATM and tried to encourage one another, as they drifted in the cold benumbing sea on that unfortunate November night. By and by, another man came swimming towards them, whom they knew, when he pushed aside his long wet hair, to be Fitzstephen. Where is the prince? ATM said he. Gone. Gone. ATM the 2 cried together. And neither he, nor his brother, nor his sister, nor the king of TMS niece, nor her brother, nor any one of all the brave 300, noble or commoner, except we 3, has risen above the water. ATM Fitzstephen, with a ghastly face, cried, woe, woe, to me. ATM and sunk to the bottom. The other 2 clung to the yard for some hours. At length the young noble said faintly, I am exhausted, and chilled with the cold, and can hold no longer. Farewell, good friend. God preserve you. ATM so, he dropped and sunk, and of all the brilliant crowd, the poor butcher of Rouen alone was saved. In the morning, some fishermen saw him floating in his sheepskin coat, and got him into their boat to the sole relater of the dismal tale. For 3 days, no one dared to carry the intelligence to the king. At length, they sent into his presence a little boy, who, weeping bitterly, and kneeling at his feet, told him that the White Ship was lost with all on board. The king fell to the ground like a dead man, and never, never afterwards, was seen to smile. But he plotted again, and promised again, and bribed and bought again, in his old deceitful way. Having no son to succeed him, after all his pains, the prince will never yoke us to the plough, now. ATM said the English people, he took a second wife Iwadile. I saw Alice, a Duke ATM's daughter, and the Pope ATM's niece, having no more children. However, he proposed to the barons to swear that they would recognize as his successor, his daughter Matilda, whom, as she was now a widow, he married to the eldest son of the Count of Anjou, Geoffrey, surnamed Plantagenet, from a custom he had of wearing a sprig of flowering broom, called Gene tilde superscript AT in French, in his cap for a feather. As one false man usually makes many, and as a false king, in particular, is pretty certain to make a false court, the barons took the oath about the succession of Matilda, and her children after her, twice over, without in the least intending to keep it. The king was now relieved from any remaining fears of William Fitzrobert, by his death in the monastery of Streatholme, in France, at 26 years old, of a pike wound in the hand. And as Matilda gave birth to three sons, he thought the succession to the throne secure. He spent most of the latter part of his life, which was troubled by family quarrels, in Normandy, to be near Matilda. When he had reigned upward of 35 years, and was 67 years old, he died of an indigestion and fever, brought on by eating, when he was far from well, of a fish called lamprey, against which he had often been cautioned by his physicians. His remains were brought over to Reading Abbey to be buried. You may perhaps hear the cunning and promise-breaking of King Henry I, called Apolisiatm by some people, and Adiplomasiatm by others. Neither of these fine words will in the least mean that it was true, and nothing that is not true can possibly be good. His greatest merit, that I know of, was his love of learning. I should have given him greater credit even for that, if it had been strong enough to induce him to spare the eyes of a certain poet he once took prisoner, who was a knight besides. But he ordered the poet ATM's eyes to be torn from his head, because he had laughed at him in his verses, and the poet, in the pain of that torture, dashed out his own brains against his prison wall. King Henry I was avaricious, revengeful, and so false, that I suppose a man never lived whose word was less to be relied upon. Chapter XIII. England under Matilda and Stephen. The king was no sooner dead than all the plans and schemes he had laboured at so long, and lied so much for, crumbled away like a hollow heap of sand. Stephen, whom he had never mistrusted or suspected, started up to claim the throne. Stephen was the son of Adela, the conqueror ATM's daughter, married to the Count of Blois. To Stephen, and to his brother Henry, the late king had been liberal, making Henry Bishop of Winchester, and finding a good marriage for Stephen, and much enriching him. This did not prevent Stephen from hastily producing a false witness, a servant of the late king, to swear that the king had named him for his heir upon his deathbed. On this evidence the Archbishop of Canterbury crowned him. The new king, so suddenly made, lost not a moment in seizing the royal treasure, and hiring foreign soldiers with some of it to protect his throne. If the dead king had even done as the false witness said, he would have had small right to will away the English people, like so many sheep or oxen, without their consent. But he had, in fact, bequeathed all his territory to Matilda, who, supported by Robert, Earl of Gloucester, soon began to dispute the crown. Some of the powerful barons and priests took her side, some took Stifton ATM's, all fortified their castles, and again the miserable English people were involved in war, from which they could never derive advantage whosoever was victorious, and in which all parties plundered, tortured, starved, and ruined them. 5 years had passed since the death of Henry I, and during those 5 years there had been two terrible invasions by the people of Scotland under their king, David, who was at last defeated with all his army when Matilda, attended by her brother Robert and a large force, appeared in England to maintain her claim. A battle was fought between her troops and King Stifton ATM's at Lincoln, in which the king himself was taken prisoner, after bravely fighting until his battle axe and sword were broken, and was carried into strict confinement at Gloucester. Matilda then submitted herself to the priests, and the priests crowned her Queen of England. She did not long enjoy this dignity. The people of London had a great affection for Stephen, Many of the barons considered it degrading to be ruled by a woman, and the queen Atiemeh's temper was so haughty that she made innumerable enemies.